So, Pat, we're talking about heavy metals this week.
I never liked heavy metals. What was Metallica? Was that a metal?
I think that has to qualify.
Wait a second. I thought this was an episode about dangerous heavy metals in our bodies.
How about Ozzy Osbourne?
I think I was on call during that era.
Welcome to The Genius of Wellness, a podcast brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare. Learn more at thegeniusofwellness.org. I'm Ted Canova. All kidding aside, heavy metals are all around us. On the ground we walk on, in the water we drink, and in the products we use every day. Exposure could lead to Parkinson's, MS, Alzheimer's, muscular dystrophy, even cancer. But before you lose all hope, listen to Drs. Pat Hopkins and Steve Roberts and functional nurse nutritionist Leslie Frodema arm us with valuable information to stay healthy.
Heavy metal is probably the one thing that our bodies really do not like. And going back and thinking of the amalgam put in my mouth by dentists over the years and exposure to things that I had no understanding could wreak such havoc with our system. Because each time we go down the path of root cause analysis, it's like the three of us all realize there's another peeling of the onion, another leaf we have to turn over and go deeper dive. And I keep hoping we find the ultimate end to that road, but this sounds like it might be it.
Steve, we're not just talking about metals in the mouth from the dentist. What else are we talking about?
Well, it's tricky. I mean, there are some man-made sources of this, and that's actually where a lot of it is, where we've polluted the environment and it's made its way into our food supply, the water supply, the air we breathe.
But metals?
Yes, actually, in the air we breathe even. And I know there's this sense of, you know, metals are all just like this solid rock in front of us that you have to hold on to, but they actually can be aerosolized particles that you breathe in, and it can be microscopic in the water you drink. When you think about lead pipe, water pipes, and the solder we used to use, that's all stuff that can actually contaminate the water that you drink from your tap. So when people say, oh, you know, tap water is just as good as bottled water, well, I mean, bottled water has its problems with plastics that leach into it, and our tap water potentially has problems with lead and other things that are in our municipal water supply. Sure, we try and treat things from water treatment facilities, but you're only as good as what you try and treat and what you try and filter out, and some things we aren't filtering out.
Leslie, from where you sit as a functional nurse nutritionist, how do heavy metals affect our bodies day to day?
One of the things that I think about with heavy metals is the body's ability to detoxify. One thing I think about when I see a patient with persistent health problems that aren't getting better despite fixing their gut, getting their gut working well, despite having their inflammatory markers fall, despite all the progress they make, but they still have pain or they still have brain fog or cognitive issues, that we have to, as Dr. Hopkins said, start looking at a deeper level. And that level often starts with doing a heavy metal analysis. So there's something in the person's body that is preventing them from really completely recovering their health.
Stephen, metals are found naturally in the Earth's crust, but the metals also enter our surroundings naturally through soil erosion and the weather and mining and things like that. So it seems that the industrial complex is just running amok for us to really pay attention to all of this.
Yeah, and it's especially become a pervasive problem, really industrial era in the last 150 years, but then post-World War II, the introduction of not just heavy metals, but really all chemicals really that are in the environment. But that's a broader topic than we're trying to focus on here today.
Yeah, let's focus like on mercury and arsenic and lead and things like that.
Sure.
It's all scary stuff that I think we take for granted that it's entering our body.
Well, it's always fun when you tell somebody they have very high levels of arsenic. They say, really? And I thought we were going to celebrate our anniversary this year. Could my spouse be taking me out? And then when I started to research where you got arsenic, I was like, oh my God, Like, how can we protect ourselves? It's everywhere.
Yeah, I think arsenic is a good example of one that it's not necessarily from man-made pollution all the time. I mean, living in the Northeast where there's a pretty strong granite rock bed layer, it's pretty common to be in the water. Now, there are more toxic forms of arsenic than others, and so that's one of the things we do need to kind of consider here. But another common place where we may inadvertently introduce a higher amount of arsenic into our supply is in an effort to achieve greater health. We may recommend gluten-free diets, and people may start to increase the amount of rice food that they take in. And all of a sudden, we may have actually traded another problem here by accumulating higher amounts of arsenic into someone's diet by doing that.
Actually, we had a patient that her levels of arsenic came back sky high, and we kept trying to drill down where was she getting it. And we traced it back. A lot of her symptoms, neurologic symptoms, started when she went gluten-free. And she said, you know, I eat those rice cakes, and then I looked at all my gluten-free products, and they were all rice flour. And she had sky high levels of arsenic.
That is so surprising. Well, we know that most paints and dyes and soaps and things like that contain arsenic, but also pesticides, fertilizers, animal feed. They just have higher amounts of arsenic.
Well, arsenic was used as an appetite stimulant in poultry, and it was used as an antibiotic for turkeys. It was a skin disease. And all of this has been really right up until the last couple of years that the FDA has started to say perhaps we don't need as much arsenic in our environment as we're allowing.
Leslie, growing up, it was always lead. It was paint chips and stuff like that that I remember seeing the public service announcements warning us about. But it's more than just lead that we're facing right now. Has this always been this silent danger around us and we're just now more aware of it, or has it been growing over the last few decades?
I think it has been growing over the last few decades as the amount of pollution in our environment increases. You still get lead fallout from airplanes going overhead, from the fuel in airplanes. The increased use of just chemicals in the environment that leach into our water supply and end up in our fish. Fish is another source of mercury that you have to be concerned of. We talked about arsenic in rice, but arsenic is also prevalent in chicken. I had one patient who avoided rice because she was concerned about arsenic, ate a lot of chicken, and still had high levels of arsenic. Because as Dr. Hopkins pointed out, there are certain feeds where these heavy metals, such as arsenic, are added because they help prevent a certain disease in the animal. But then that passes through the animal, gets into their tissue, and then when we eat it, we absorb it. And actually, a lot of the rice that has arsenic in it, it's because it was grown in land in the South where chickens used to be kept and grown. And so, again, it was through that toxicity that it entered the soil, and then you grow rice in it and it absorbs it. So it's not that you should never eat chicken, and then not that you should never eat rice, but you have to really be more knowledgeable about where your food sources are from.
Stephen, let's move on to aluminum. It's been reported over the years that aluminum exposure is probably a risk factor for early onset Alzheimer's.
Yes. My favorite researchers on this topic would be Christopher Exley, who's a British researcher, and he probably knows more about aluminum, or aluminium, as he would say, than just about anyone in the world. And I believe he's actually been involved in actually some cryogenic slicings of brain tissue where he's done some analysis on some of this. And it's an interesting thing because what you were saying before, yes, aluminum is very prevalent. It's very, very common in our Earth's crust. It's everywhere, but it's actually in a bound form that wouldn't actually have a way of getting into our bodies. It's really what we've been doing in the last century and in the last several decades, especially, where we've divorced aluminum from that bound form, and we've started using it, put it into nanoparticles now. And that's created a situation where it can actually get into our bodies, and we haven't evolved in a way to actually address aluminum and to get it out of our bodies. So what type of problems does that mean it could impact our health? That's a question that we really don't have answers for.
Let's move on to chromium. Pat, exposure to chromium can result in ulcers. If you see somebody with ulcers, do you go to chromium?
Well, I think I go to heavy metals because I think what I'm trying to find is the tip of the iceberg. And what we fail in our whole healthcare system is adequate testing for environmental impact of all the 36,000 new chemicals that have been introduced into the environment. But what we don't know is the synergy of this toxicity. And I think the precursor that puts us at risk is that our minerals are being drained out. We're like a car battery, that you're having the batteries are not going to work if you don't keep the carburetor, the oil, the points checked, all of those things that support a system. So when you drain out the minerals, so think of the world, minerals and metals. Your cells like minerals. They like magnesium, manganese, selenium, zinc, copper, iron, molybdenum, my favorite one. But they
what is that
don't,
one?
Molybdenum.
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 I'll have to look that one up.
It's great if you're going to have a martini, have molybdenum before, it increases your metabolism of alcohol. But when you drain down those minerals, your enzymes in your cells say, I don't have a mineral. I'll take anything that comes by that I can attach to chemically in a way that allows the reaction to take place. So it grabs a metal. And that is ultimately toxic to this cell.
I think I would actually add there as well, when you actually have these toxic metals, they actually require the consumption and use of some of our minerals in order to be processed so that our body can get them out, because our body wants to get rid of the toxic metals. And so it's a situation where not only are we not absorbing the good minerals that we want, but we're actually using them up and wasting them. And so our body has an increased demand for what we're not actually now, what we're not absorbing now.
Right, because the soil is deficient in minerals. And that's where we see so much of the deficit now. We can talk about vitamin D. We've talked about that. And then as you research down, and we keep saying, and Leslie's famous, if the terrain is healthy, the body will survive. And our terrain is being challenged. We wouldn't plant our tomato plant in the gravel. We would put it in soil, and we would attend to the soil with compost and sulfur and nitrates, because we want robust tomatoes. Well, we're the same. If our food is deficient in minerals, we can't deal with the metals.
Hi, it's Ted, taking a second to remind you that the Genius of Wellness is your place for interesting podcasts, tips for living a healthier life, and doctors who provide a personalized approach to healthcare. You can find it all, plus schedule an appointment at thegeniusofwellness.org. Now back to our conversation.
To pick up on Dr. Hopkins' point about the terrain, that's why as a nutritionist in the practice, I try to really help people think about how to create nutrient-dense diets, because our minerals, our nutrients, our vitamins are being drawn from us in a way, in order to handle and detoxify and move out metals and other toxicities, then they're being challenged in a way that they haven't been probably decades before.
Leslie, you're always good at bringing it home with some advice that we could use.
So what can you do on a daily basis to create a nutrient-dense way of eating? One, obviously, center your diet around plant-based foods. We know that leafy green vegetables are very helpful for detoxifying the body. They help and support the liver, which has to deal with all these heavy metals, to detoxify. Things like cruciferous vegetables, vegetables that are high in sulfur. Sulfur fuels a very important pathway in the liver to help us detoxify. So the more we can do to create a nutrient-dense way of eating, to have a rich terrain in our body, the more we can weather the storms of the heavy metals that come through us and not deplete us to the point where we can't then detoxify. And also remember, things like sugar rob us of our minerals. And so by choosing foods that introduce a lot of nutrients, we can put ourselves in a better position to detoxify.
Why is the public not aware of the dangers of heavy metals, Pat?
Well, I think part of the problem is identifying an ability to quantify our risk. So the quantification of the risk is not only environmental. Where is it coming? Is it in your chicken? Is it in your rice? But it also, when you've ingested it, is it in your fat cells? And how do you make a total body assessment? We don't have a magnet. You know, we're not an Etch-a-Sketch where we could say, oh, the metals all went over to the right side. So how do I look at somebody if even I test their hair, their blood, their urine, I cannot make an accurate assessment. None of us can. in the world make an accurate assessment of what your body burden is. So we have to then look at clinical shifts. Why are neurodegenerative diseases escalating? What is it? What's the last frontier of how do we challenge our healthcare system to identify the exposure, whether it's cancer or neurodegenerative diseases? It is a healthcare burden we cannot literally afford.
Well, few metals can be removed totally by elimination, by going to the bathroom. And even some metals, they get accumulated in the body and the food chain, and you just never get them out of your system. So what products could we be taking to help us?
I think we actually have to take a step back and understand that the conventional medical model right now suggests that we should just let them sit there. We should just let them accumulate over time. The only thing that we should ever really, you know, invest ourselves in trying to address that issue is if we had a sudden, really, really acute situation, like we fell in a vat of this stuff at the job, at the workplace. That's the only time that we really see the conventional medical model really addressing this issue, because I think their concern is if we're going to use some of these drugs to get the metals out, we might cause more problems. And so they've just kind of ignored it for the last 40 and 50 years as an issue. I think there's a general acceptance that, yes, these metals do accumulate and they do likely contribute to chronic disease. But because we don't have the tools, we shouldn't even think about it. Like that's what I see happening. And I am very appreciative of the people who are going outside the box and saying, well, you know, there's maybe a way to tackle this where we can minimize the risks of going after it. And that's why using some of these other natural chelating protocols, some of the fasting regimens when your terrain is ready for it, to help mobilize some of the heavy metals. These are things that are actually part of the therapeutic protocols to address reducing your built up an accumulated bioburden of the metals that you might have.
And Dr. Roberts makes a good point. While conventional medicine doesn't have the toolbox right now, if you take a broader view, there is a toolbox that you can use. And I think we've invested a lot of time and effort here at Hopkins Medical Group to really develop our skills in using that toolbox. There are good supplements. There are good herbs. You can use food. You can use detox baths. There are ways, but you have to think beyond the conventional toolbox and work with practitioners who have the experience to guide you through that.
Your largest organ is your skin, and sweating is a way to detox metal.
And that's actually one of the first things I generally recommend to people. Deodorant is potentially okay. I'm not wholesale against deodorant, but antiperspirant.
Just get rid of it.
Don't use it. That you're actually stopping the body from doing what it needs to do to eliminate some of this stuff. So there are certain deodorants that are okay, so long as you look through the chemical list and things like that. But antiperspirant, as a matter of principle, is something that I would recommend against.
Guys, another great conversation on something that is kind of out of sight, out of mind. As Steve says, unless you fall into a vat of metals, you're not really addressing it. So once again, you've given us a lot to think about and a lot to act upon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The Genius of Wellness. If you like our podcast, do us a favor. Share it with your friends and family and write a review on this podcast channel. It'll help more people find us. The Genius of Wellness is brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare. Learn more at thegeniusofwellness.org. I'm Ted Canova. See you next time.